all of these political parties are campaigning as if they're guaranteed to be the only governing party. We're going to have a coalition government. An election is not a marriage. You are not getting married. You can divorce. You are not getting married.
Not a lifetime commitment.
Think of a political party like a bus. If everybody under the age of 30 is eligible to vote, so from 18 to 30, was registered to vote, they would make up the chunk of the biggest chunk of registered voters. They could swing the election.
Don't hold back. Say it loud.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the internationally acclaimed podcast, Don't Hold Back, with me, Nozibele Ekpamgana Mayaba. Gosh, guys, it's busy. It's election time. I just want to unpack the topic further, particularly focusing on young people that seem not to be interested in voting. They don't see the point. Is it going to make a difference? What is the future of South Africa? That is why I'm so excited to have in studio political analyst and our Gauteng's very own Dr. Sithembile Mbete. Doc, thank you so much for making it.
For having me.
Now, I know you are very busy. You're traveling the world, the country, giving talks, you're writing. You're also a lecturer in the Department of Political Sciences at the University of Pretoria. So I know your schedule is very busy, but thank you so much for making it today.
Okay? Thank you.
Now, before we get into the topic of the day, I know we were speaking offline. There's so much to unpack, okay? There's so much to unpack. But before we get into that, it's a tradition on the show that I ask each guest to bring a snack. You know, before you tell me why you brought the snack, we're going to get into that much later. Tell the viewers what you brought.
I brought a milk chocolate Kit Kat.
Okay. That's very nice because I know I like chocolates, although I should be on a diet. We're going to get into it that much later. Doc, it's election time.
Yeah.
Silly season.
Thank you. It sums it all up perfectly, right? But I've been, you know, reading so much and also hearing so many hashtags. This election is important. This election, you know, 2024 is our 1994. In your opinion, why should we make a big deal about this particular election?
Well, look, I think that there's maybe three or four things. One, it's the 30th anniversary election. It's going to be our seventh democratic election at national and provincial level. It's 30 years since 1994 when we had our first democratic elections. And so it's a significant milestone in terms of that. The second thing that is important about this election is that it's the first election where 45% just about of the voters will have been born after 1989, 1990. So 45% of the voters on the voters' roll are under the age of 35.
Wow.
The born freeze, you know, so people born after Mandela was released from prison, so after 1990, and then certainly those born after 1994, we've got a big generational shift now from those who lived through apartheid to remember it very vividly. You know, I'm a geriatric millennial. I was born in 1984. I was 10 in 1994. So I remember the long queues.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, Mandela being released from prison, all of that. This is going to be the first election where almost the majority of the voters' roll are people that don't have those memories. Yeah. And so what does that mean around the choices that they make, around how they participate? The third thing that I think is important about this election is that it's going to be the most contested national and provincial election that we've had since 1994. The IEC said that there were going to be 56 parties, I think, on the national ballot. So that is a significant number. And this is the first election since 1994 where there is a probability. I mean, there's debates amongst us analysts about how high that probability is, but where there's a probability of the ANC going below 50% at the national level. And so possibly needing to go into coalition or make some other arrangement in order to be the government. And so these three things, I think, are major reasons for why this election is so important and has got so much hype around it. Oh, and then I forgot the major fourth reason, which is that this election is going to be contested using a different electoral system at national and provincial level to what we've used before. So what that's going to mean practically is, and you're already looking at me like, you know, when my students look at me like you're looking at me, I freak out because I'm like, I've lost them somewhere.
I get you. I'm just more nervous that, dog, it's even difficult now to think about which political party or who you should be voting for, that I cannot be choosing for from a list of almost 60 people.
So let me explain to you how it's going to work. Okay. So usually during an election, a national or provincial election, you would go into the voting booth and you would be given two ballots.
Yes.
One ballot for the National Assembly, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. With the list of the party names.
Correct.
And another ballot for the provincial legislature in the province where you live. Mm-hmm. This year, you're going to get three ballots.
See what I mean? I don't need a third choice. Okay.
You're going to get three ballots.
Okay.
Okay.
Bring it on.
So the one ballot is still going to be for the provincial legislature.
Yes.
So you're still going to get one ballot for your province. Mm-hmm. Okay. And on that ballot is going to be the names of political parties, mm-hmm. but also the names of the independent candidates that are standing in your province.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now, that's going to differ from province to province. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, then for the National Assembly, you're going to get two ballots. So us as voters are going to get a ballot for the regional to national.
Yeah.
That's what the ballot's going to be called, regional to national seats. Mm-hmm. And on that ballot will be the names of political parties, but they will also be the names of the independent candidates that want to represent your province in the National Assembly. So we'll have two ballots. For the us as voters, we'll receive two ballots for the National Assembly, and then we'll receive one ballot for our province. Okay. Now, I'm sure it's something that's brewing for you, is that, but how could you have a single person running against a political party, which is a group of people? Exactly. It's highly difficult. It's almost impossible, which is why so many of the people that were wanting to run as independent candidates have just started political parties, because it's actually much easier to compete within a political party than it
than
is as an individual. But the second thing also is that when you think of like the resources, the money and all of that sort of stuff, it's just hugely expensive to run a political campaign anyway.
Yes.
So it's much easier to do that as a group. So that is why when the IEC earlier in March closed the application process for both the political parties and the independent candidates, there were actually very few independent candidates relative to the political parties, you know, that submitted their applications basically to be able to run in this election. So there were only 16 independent candidates that put their names forward to run for the National Assembly. And those were still being verified. So I'm not sure how many of them have been approved by the IEC. But we're not going to get as many independent candidates as we thought we were going to get, because the system is so much more complicated and actually still makes it almost impossible for an independent candidate to compete at national level.
Let me come in there. That what you just explained to me, I'm already thinking of a first-time voter who has no idea what to expect, right? And I haven't seen... and I think that's where we lose a lot of young people, that firstly, they're not interested because there's this complexity that they think is within the political space, but because I feel there's a market that we're not targeting.
Yeah.
There's a huge market that we're not targeting. I mean, when I was looking at the stats, 27 million people, that, when I last checked, that have been registered to vote, but over 13 million that are eligible that have not registered. Yeah. And a lot of them are young people, right? Where are we missing? Where's the missing piece? Why are we losing them?
Look, you know, young South Africans are very interested in politics. I mean, you spend any time on social media and young people are talking about politics. When you are on university campuses, when you're in Ekoneni, you're hearing young people talk about politics. And of course, with the number of protests that we have in the country every day, you know, protests are a form of political expression and democratic expression. So young people are interested in politics. They just do not trust and don't know enough about formal politics to want to participate in it.
Okay.
And I think that's the gap that we're struggling to bridge, is that there's an interest in politics and how the country is run.
Yes, and things that aren't working out.
And things that aren't working out. And young people are concerned about unemployment, about services, about education, NSFAS, all of these things. But they don't see the formal political structures as something that they can use to achieve their political aims. Yeah. And part of it, I think a big part of it, is that we just don't do enough to inform young people about how the political structures actually work, about how elections work. Our civic education in this country is very, very poor. Yeah. I think the other thing is that our political parties in particular, parties campaign or they speak to the people they think will vote for them and they ignore everyone else. And so because we also have this, we've taken as, you know, common knowledge or as accepted wisdom that young people don't participate in elections, no one thinks that they need to speak to young people to convince them about being part of, you know, about being registered or about turning out
to
vote.
So they don't see it as an opportunity.
They don't see it as an opportunity.
Oh, okay.
They actually see it as like, it's too much trouble. Let's just focus on our core constituency. And the third thing is that we have very old politicians.
Yeah.
And when you don't see yourself...
Representation
matters.
Yep.
When you don't see yourself, you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah.
So when you don't see yourself amongst those who are running the country, then it becomes very difficult to be like, well, okay, well, this is clearly not for me. It's a game that's for somebody else. It's not for me. And so I'm just going to stick out and not play it. But of course, the reality is that South Africa is a very young country. The median age in South Africa is 27. So the majority of South Africans, two-thirds of South Africans, are under the age of 40.
Yeah.
So if all young people were registered, if everybody under the age of 30 who's eligible to vote, so from 18 to 30, was registered to vote, they would make up the chunk of the biggest chunk of registered voters. They could swing the election, even as it is, actually, with the number of young people that are currently registered out of the 27 million. People under the age of 40, they're the biggest group in the registered population. So young people can actually make a difference.
Yeah.
Democracy, I like to say, is not a spectator sport. It's a contact sport. There's no audience in a democracy.
So it's not a matter of, I'm not happy about something, no, you're not going to do anything about it. Here's an opportunity, do something about
it. And if you're not on the field, other people are making the decisions for you.
You know why? I'm so happy that you said that, because there was a debate going on social media where someone said, guys, my vote is not going to make a difference. So if you want to vote, you can vote. And then someone came through and said, no, it's not about you not voting, but it's a matter of actually realizing if you don't, then you're giving someone power to make a decision on your behalf, right?
Our system is designed to make it possible for the largest number of parties to get into the legislature and be represented, so that the largest number of people in the country, the largest number of voters, will be represented by the people that are sitting in parliament.
Okay.
So because of that, every vote actually does count. Because firstly, turnout is important. How many votes are cast determines what that quota is going to be. So when there are many votes cast, that quota is large. When there are fewer votes cast, that quota is small. And what that does is that it benefits the bigger parties, actually, because the bigger parties will usually always be able to get their people out to vote. And so they just need to get their supporters out to vote and then make sure that everybody else's supporters don't come out to vote. So for the big parties, the ANC, the DA, and increasingly the EFF, which is now an established party, if the voter turnout is low, it's actually good for them because they've got a core base of voters that are always going to turn out. Whether they've been advertised to or not, they are always going to turn out. The people who suffer the most when voter turnout is low are actually smaller parties, because firstly, the voter turnout is what is used to calculate the formula, but because newer voters are more likely to vote for the smaller parties.
Now, Doc, you are bringing in things that even me, as not, I'm not a first-time voter, I've done this before, but I've never thought about it that way. Imagine someone that's sitting there once again, first-time voter, and thinking to themselves, oh, there's so much more that we can do. If you're a social entrepreneur or an entrepreneur, there's a whole market that you should be tapping into, just doing more education on elections and political landscape or whatever the case may be, so that young people can feel more empowered. Yeah. We really feel we need to feel more empowered. We're going to take a break, not really a break, because I want to play a game with you, a very short game, and then we'll continue with some of the questions. So I went to your Twitter account, and or X rather, your X handle, and it says politics and IR, universities and education policy, books, handbags, Idris Elba, Lenny Kravitz. I can understand why.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Wait, it says not necessarily in that order. So I want to ask you, what is your order of preference?
of what you've said. Okay. Yes. Okay. So of the whole thing, or just the boys, or both?
Actually, everything.
All of it.
Yes.
Okay. So books.
Yes.
Handbags.
More than Lenny.
Okay. No, books, Lenny. Mm-hmm. And I've got a Lenny story. Lenny told me he loved me. I will tell you
this. He probably said that to a couple of girls.
Girl, let me tell you.
No.
Let me tell you when Lenny Kravitz told me he loved me.
Okay.
So it was I'm old. So it was, I think, 2001.
Okay.
It was the first concert I was allowed to go to on my own.
Yes.
Lenny Kravitz and a bunch. It was like a festival vibe. Thank you, Mom and Dad. How I was allowed to go to this. Yeah, but I went with my friend.
Yeah.
And it was like a festival vibe. The whole lot of like different artists. Lenny Kravitz was one of them. I went with my friends from school. At some point, I lost my friends, okay, which is terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were standing just outside of Golden Circle. So we'd managed to arrive early, early on the Friday and gotten, you know, very as close to the stage as we possibly could.
Yes.
I mean. And so I'd lost my friends. I found some other girls. You know, girls will always find each other and, like, love each other.
Yes.
So I found some other girls. And Lenny Kravitz is on stage. And he is singing. I can't remember what song he'd sang before. Mm-hmm. But then he was about to sing his famous It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
Okay.
And so then, and that's like a love song. It's like a slow, you know, yeah. And slow jammy vibes, you know. But anyway, so there was a pause.
Okay.
Between this very loud song and this quieter song. And me and these girls I was with, we screamed out, "I love you, Lenny." And I swear to God, he looked right at us and he said, "I love you too."
He was not speaking to you.
He was speaking to a couple of people that were looking at him. He looked directly at me, actually. And my voice is loud. It was loud even then. And he said, "I love you too, baby." So actually, I feel like Lenny liked me even before books. But books will never leave you. Girls, books will never leave you. So books, Lenny.
Where would I find you on a Saturday afternoon, and what would you be doing?
You would find me in my garden or one of my friend's gardens drinking wine.
Okay. And you've worked in at a couple of places. You've worked or studied in Cape Town, Pretoria, Canada. Name one good thing about Canada.
In Canada, I was in a little town called Waterloo, which is a university town about 45 minutes outside of Toronto.
Yes.
My favorite thing about Toronto, so I got to visit go to Toronto a lot, and my favorite thing about Toronto is just how diverse it is. Mm. 80%, I think, of the population of Toronto was born outside of Toronto. Maybe it's not 80%, but it's a fair amount. And so it's the only non-South African city I've ever been in where no one asked me where I was from.
Oh, wow.
Because the assumption is that you live in Canada, you live in Toronto. It's the most diverse place I've ever been to, and it was really, really great.
Okay. Doug, I have two more questions before we close. Ne? The first question is, I'm not going to ask you who should we be voting for, but some of the things you like, one of the reasons I'm not voting is because I don't know who to vote for, you know? Do I align myself with the political movement that's been around for many years that freed us from apartheid? Or should I give others a chance, right? I want you to speak to young people. What should we be looking out for when we're making the decision of who we should be voting for?
First is look at the manifestos. Look at what the political parties say they believe in, what they say they want to do. And yes, even if a political party goes into opposition, so it doesn't become the government, right? But by virtue of being in the National Assembly or being in a provincial legislature, they are involved in lawmaking. That's the biggest job of the National Assembly, is to make laws. Yeah. And they make a lot of laws. And they discuss those laws in committee and whatever. So your party will actually be able to contribute, maybe if not in not right, you know, introducing a law, but in making sure a law is passed or not passed, and how that law changes, right, and what it is. So what do they say they believe in? What's important to them? And does that align with your values, with your needs, with your priorities? Second thing I would say is that now that the political party lists out, look at who the parties say they want to send to parliament or to a provincial legislature. Do you want to be represented by those people? Google is your friend. You know, look people's names up. If you see a name, you're like, I'm a man.
Question mark.
Take that into account. Because I think that one of the great benefits that's come from all this debate on electoral reform is that now these party lists are being made public in a way that they haven't been made before. And so you can actually check and see who would these people be sending to represent me. Sure. And do I agree with it? And then the third thing is do look at the leadership of the party. Yeah. Leaders matter. They do make a big difference to not just how the party is publicly, so in a platform like a legislature, but also in the internal workings of the party. And so look at the leaders and say, do I want to give these people power to make decisions that will influence my life over the next 5 years? And also remember that an election is not a marriage. Okay. You are not getting married.
You can divorce. Not a lifetime commitment.
Think of a political party like a bus.
Okay.
You bus, you stop, you get onto the bus. If the bus is going in the wrong direction, or if the bus smells, you stop. You get off at the next stop.
Yeah. Some are saying, okay, in this general election, to some degree, ANC might lose power, but it will still have some kind of majority. And some are saying, gradually, you know, they will lose power. Maybe in the next election, they will do that. Now, it begs a question on me to say, what is then the political future of our country, right? If they're going to lose power, and some people are very happy, like, you know what, we've given you a chance. It's not working out, as you said. It's not a lifetime commitment. You need to go, okay? But how does that look like then from a national level? If ANC, for example, loses power in the next general election, are they going to form a coalition? But will that look like? In reference to the fact that we've seen it not necessarily working from a provincial level or from a local municipality level. So I'm concerned, what's going to happen?
Let me say that I think that this is going to be an election where we must think of the national result separately in some ways from the provincial result. Okay. So provincially, I think that we're going to have a lot more differentiation in terms of the governments of political of provinces than we've had before. Okay. So Gauteng, and I know you guys have a Gauteng audience, we're going to have a coalition government. There is no single party in Gauteng. There's no single party that commands the support of over 50% of the citizens of Gauteng. So one of the things that I would be asking, if there's politicians that come door to door and knock on your door and ask you things and want to campaign with you, ask them, what are you guys going to do? What's your plan for a coalition government? Who do you want to go into coalition with? What kind of issues do you want to go into coalition about? What processes are you using to prepare for that? What would you want to fix that's gone wrong with the coalitions that have... Ask them that, because it's going to be a reality yet. all of these political parties are campaigning as if they're guaranteed to be the only governing party of Gauteng. KZN is going to be in a similar situation, I think. And so these are the things to think about. At a national level, I still think that the ANC is going to be able to form a government. Okay. Whether it does it, the ANC in the last election got 57.5% of the vote. Mm. It got about 10.6 million votes or 10.3 million votes. That would mean that for the ANC to fall way below 50%, right? Let's say to 45%, or I saw a thing the other day that said 38%. Okay. It would need to lose nearly 20 percentage points in order to fall that far below 50%. I still think that's highly unlikely because we still see how much support the ANC has, particularly in more rural provinces. I think that the wild card for the ANC is going to be KZN. Even if the ANC, let's say, fell to 45% and there were other parties, the opposition, that had 55%, will those parties with the 55% be able to cooperate enough to be able to form an opposition government is the big question. So I think that the likelihood that we're still going to have an ANC in government at national level is quite high. I would advise all young people watching this, have a look at the party manifestos, have a look at the party lists, have a look at the leaders of the parties and see what it says to you. Yeah, and start really familiarizing yourself with all of these political actors because there is a lot that people can do. In your province, start looking at who is running in the province. Who are the independent candidates that are running in the province? Young people are a huge constituency. And if they organized, if you organized around your, you know, church group or your soccer team or whatever it is, there's a lot that you can get done.
Doc, after all of that discussion, I feel like I need to just bring in some sugar. Yabon, you told us that you had brought in Kit Kat.
Yes.
What's the story behind Kit Kat, quickly?
So, when I was growing up, Kit Kats were my favorite chocolate.
Yes.
And for me, it wasn't just the chocolate, but it was the whole performance of opening it. Because back in the day, a Kit Kat, it was a silver wrapper, and then it had like a paper cover that had the logo and everything. And then you would slip off the cover. And then the silver, and then you would do this with your... You see, you can't even do it properly on this thing. But I'm going to try and demonstrate.
Yeah, yeah.
That you would like do this on the silver wrapper to break the wrapper. And then you would break it and it would break perfectly. And then you would do that with the next one. So what it meant was that after school, if you had a Kit Kat, you could make it last the whole like afternoon, actually. Because you would then score it, and then you take one, and then you eat that one finger, and then you put it away. And then your new one, then you eat the next one, and then you eat the next one. Now that it's plastic, I mean, you're just going to eat the whole thing. And it just doesn't feel like the whole ritual of, like, doing the thing and then breaking it. Oh,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. But it's still a very good sharing chocolate, so that's why I bought it.
Do you want to share a finger?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's share a finger.
Let's do this.
Thank you.
There you go. Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, that feels good.
Oh.
So good. I'm supposed to be on a diet, but no. After all of that discussion, it got me pumped up. That is much needed.
Exactly. You're having a workout anyway because
see
of all the adrenaline.
Exactly. But Doc, thank you so much for this. Once again, I cannot, you know, express more gratitude in terms of how you've been able to simplify some of the terminology of some of the concepts that were foreign to us, you know, as young people. I honestly do believe that if you continue with such conversations, then it's going to lead us to the right or the right path of having more people, you know, engaging in politics, wanting to become change makers in our country, actually seeing a political career in terms of what they can do to change our country. So thank you so much. I'll be following you wherever you are with your interviews during the election period particularly. But thank you so much for taking time to come and speak to us.
Thanks for having me. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
It was so much fun.
The message is clear. We need to go out in numbers and vote. There is no such thing such as a wasted vote or your vote doesn't matter. Now you're giving people power to make decisions on your behalf. Young people, you've registered. Let's go out in numbers. Thank you so much for joining me today. It has been an insightful conversation. I am pumped up. I can't wait for the 29th of May, 2024, where we are going to make a difference. Until next time, guys, my name is Nozivele Gamgana Mayaba. Catch this episode and many other episodes wherever you listen to your podcast and on YouTube. I'll see you next time. Bye.